This piece was brought to you by S. Wallace Edwards & Sons, SurreyFarms.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Pleasure.
We take as commonplace banter the proverb, "The apple never falls far from the tree." But we don't often stop to consider what that proverbial apple contains within, which is 5 genetically unique seeds. Andy Brennan, founder of Erenberg Cidery, explains.
That's one of the unique things about apples, is that they were designed to fall on the ground and then have large mammals come and then bring them to new places. Because, as you know, the apple doesn't fall far from the tree. So if it's going to fruit, and like in the next valley over, it needs a mammal like us to bring it there. So the cows and the farm animals would often take the apples and eat them and then deposit them way on the edges of the field. So that's where you get like a lot of self-seeded trees. And that's true of where I live, because I live in a dairy county. And so on the edges of a lot of fields and hay fields, dairy cow fields, you see in May like this blossom in the woods. And then, of course, those turn into apples. And so those are self-seeded. So really only, really seedling trees only exist in the wild. They don't really, I don't know of anyone who's growing commercial seedling trees.
Each seed in an apple is unique, which makes breeding and growing apple trees from seed an unreasonable task for commercial growers, who count on reliable uniformity in taste and size for shipping and market purposes. All commercial apple varieties are clones, propagated through grafting. That means the genetic makeup of all Macintosh apple trees is identical. This caters well to the needs of commercial production, but leaves the trees and monoculture orchards more susceptible to insects, blight, and disease. American cider growers are looking at apples in a new light, or perhaps a very old light. Today they are seeking varieties of seeded trees, which colonized North America along with the first settlers. They are seeking apples that are tannic, sometimes bitter or highly acidic, nothing you would want to eat, but surprisingly pleasant to drink. Eleanor Ledger of Eden Ice Cider in Vermont explains what she looks for in an ideal ice cider apple.
By cider variety apples, we mean apples that are have a lot more tannin, so you would never want to actually eat them because they're quite bitter and tannic, but they really add character. We use not a high proportion of those in the ice cider because you don't want a bitter ice cider. It's all about sweetness and acidity. But between the heirloom varieties and the cider varieties, we're looking for great sweetness, great acidity, a little bit of nice tannin to it, and just good aromatic apple character. You know, some apples will have great ending acidity, some will have good acidity in the middle, some will have a lot of sweetness and flavor on the front, and it's by working with the different varieties that we get something that just has that beautiful, consistent balance all the way through.
Because she's making ice cider, Eleanor will be looking for different qualities in her apples than cider makers crafting dry ciders. Cider is being re-envisioned in the Northeast from what most of us equate with a beverage, which is the sweet, bubbly English ciders that have dominated the cider market for many, many years. Cider apples have a bountiful and biodiverse history in North America, though much of it was lost in time by the hatchet-wielding force of the women's temperance movement. And since Prohibition, craft cider making has not yet recovered to its prolific colonial state. Northeastern craft ciders differ greatly between producers, and each producer seems to have their own philosophy on cider making. Joy and Jeremy of Proper Cider in Brooklyn are urban cider enthusiasts. Each fall, the couple leaves their home to camp and gather apples upstate. They carry tons of apples in the back of their pickup truck down into the city to make their cider.
We can play with our style a little bit to determine how we make our cider. We can let them age a little bit longer.
Letting them sweat. Basically.
Yeah, as the apples are actually sweating, it's losing water and concentrating flavors and developing sugars. So we'll decide based on the conditions of that year what each apple tells us to do. So the apple tells us what to do.
We are the essence of handcrafted. I touch every single apple.
So from quickly washing the apples, then we grind them, and then you take this apple pulp. It's like an apple sauce, but it's got all the skins and the stems and the seeds. And we wrap them in bags, and we press them in our 20-ton shot press that we built. And
I would say our blending actually starts at that point, too, because we do field blends not just based on the time of year that we pick the apples, but then also if we've let certain things sweat between pickup trips, then we'll do kind of a custom pressing for ourselves in the backyard. So I'll taste all of the different apples, and I'll figure out which ones we can press together. And then based on the apple out of hand, we kind of decide what yeast we're going to go with, because I like to help the apple express the appleness of the apple and follow the flavors that I get, which is why we like heirloom apples a lot, too, because there's more interesting flavors in those.
letting the apple tell us what to do.
Yeah.
And while Eden Ice Ciders have their own style of acidity and crispness, Aaron Burr Cidery and Proper Cider tend to have drier, more funky styles. Their ciders are complex and a far cry from English-style cider. Andy Brennan and his wife Polly from Aaron Burr Cidery take somewhat of an opposite approach to producing cider in terms of lifestyle. They relocated from Brooklyn to upstate New York to start their orchard.
Our orchard is really now just it's like an orphanage. We have a small farm. It's a homestead, so it's only like 400 trees. And we take the signwood from the woods. We find apple trees all the time that are just, they're unusual in flavor and qualities. A lot of them have qualities that you just can't find in eating apples, particularly high Brix apples, very tannic apples. So what I do is I go around in the winter and take graft cuts from those trees. And so all those named varieties that I was growing 8 years ago, like say Golden Russet or Dabinet, now they're just being decapitated for the cyanwood of the wild ones, because I really, really, really think that the future of American cider is not in English cider varieties, and it's definitely not trying to rebrand those 20th century eating varieties. There's an insane number of, we're talking millions or billions of wild apples out there, and they're perfectly acclimated to our region. Many of them are disease resistant just by the nature of their having to fend for themselves, not having a farmer spray to get rid of the bugs. So as those wild apples have now existed for a couple of centuries in America, they've actually built their own defenses. The exact opposite of what's going on in a conventional orchard, where humans are stripping away their defenses and saying, okay, well, don't worry about that, I'm your protector now. Apples are the most sprayed crop in America, by the way, so it's not working. So not only on a genetic level should we be looking at these for the future of cider, but we should be looking at them because they're just, in my mind, superior. They really do express what we have going on here on our continent. They're not. The whole point of cider is to get diversity of apples, not to start limiting it again.
On Saturday, June 21st, Cider Wick, hosted by Jimmy's Number 43, brought together this dedicated group of cider makers to swap 2013 vintages, share knowledge, and commune. In the fall, you can look forward to Cider Week in New York City. But in the meantime, these ciders, crafted with a similar level of care and artful attention to nuance as the finest small batch bourbons and wines, are perfect libations to accompany your summer adventures. This is Laura Del Campo reporting for HeritageRadioNetwork.org, coming to you from Bushwick, Brooklyn.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.